This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, Senator Bernie Sanders on health care reforms.
But first, Building Bridges, in collaboration with South African-based Radio Workers World Productions, brings us the issues for and protests of Africa's laboring class amidst the global economic crisis.
Now, Africa is labor news and views and focus produced for Building Bridges by Radio Workers World Productions, Cape Town, South Africa.
Welcome to this Labor Report, bringing you the voices of African workers. The focus is the global economic crisis and its impact on African workers and the labor movement. Southern Africa has the highest rates of HIV and AIDS, and the impact of the economic crisis is showing danger signs for public health and food access. What have been the responses of workers and labor in Africa? Protests have been taking place all over the globe in response to this crisis in capitalism. In South Africa, protests against the lack of basic services like access to housing are growing. South Africa's inequality gap between the rich and poor is growing and is one of the world's highest. Sean Hatting is a researcher at the International Labour Research and Information Group, ILRIG, and he says that the economic crisis is historical.
The causes of the crisis go a long way back. So things like the World Economic Forum, which originated in the 70s, various governments, but along with things like the IMF and World Bank, put a whole set of policies in place to really benefit the rich. And part of this was to allow them to speculate on anything and everything, to give loans to anybody. They ran up huge debt themselves. And about 2 years ago, corporations, people had problems paying this debt, and we now have the crisis, but it's basically a system that's been put in place to benefit the rich that are the cause of the crisis.
Mark Weinberg is from the Alternative Information and Development Center, AIDC.
This economic crisis, like all economic crises before it, is caused by capitalism. It's a system that produces more and more goods and needs fewer and fewer workers. So who's going to buy the goods? They produce too much and they don't distribute the goods to the poor, so the system crashes.
The impact of this global economic crisis has had an immediate negative effect on workers. Here is Jane Muster from the Central Organization of Trade Unions, COTU, in Kenya.
We have so many workers who've been affected. The living standards have really increased and there's not been any increment in the wages. The working conditions are deteriorating because, you know, people, it's like they're working just to feed their stomachs. So any kind of job you come across, you just have to do it to put food on your table.
The quality of life and work is changing rapidly. Along with retrenchments and casualization of work, investment in health and safety standards, for example, are also affected. We spoke to a mine worker who has worked in a South African mine under the apartheid government and now in its democracy.
If you get injured, it is as if you did it deliberately. You are asked so many questions which sometimes you cannot even answer. Sometimes you are not even compensated well because they suspect that you inflicted this on yourself. But they are aware that we are using dangerous equipment here.
For him, things have never changed for the better.
There are no changes. We only get promises. But nothing is happening. We wanted to live in family units, but we are still 8 in one room. We don't even have a kitchen. As you can see, we cook and sleep right here. When my wife visits me, she is not allowed to stay here. She stays outside. We even struggle to solve our problem.
This is the African Labour Report, focusing on the impact of the global economic crisis on African workers. Next up, we will hear more about the impact of the crisis on the region with the threat to public health, food access, and the response of the labour movement. Mark from AIDC is clear on how deep the impact is.
Well, if you think in South Africa, one worker must support a family of 8 or 10, so when we lose 100,000 jobs or 200,000 jobs, these families that are already in an incredibly vulnerable situation, having to borrow from here and pay this one, and the burden is doubled or tripled. They're living on the edge, and in many cases they are pushed over the edge.
Workers have been retrenched or put on short-term contracts so that business can survive and maintain profits. Informal workers, like street traders, whose daily wages are insecure, are now experiencing even more hardship. Here is Henry Baguma, a labor analyst based in Kampala, Uganda, whose friend sells vegetables for a living.
I have a friend who works in a market. She was very happy that now tomato has gone high. Tomato 500 shillings had gone to 2,000 shillings. Now, by the same time, she sells that tomato at 2,000 shillings, getting an increase of 1,500 shillings, and spends that very money in transport or buying onions and other things that she does not have. For example, cost of sugar was 1,500 shillings. The other time. Now sugar is 2,000 shillings. So it means that even if you make a big difference on you and what you are selling now, you still have to spend that very money I've made from what you are selling to the item you do not have.
Increases on basic commodities are impacting on workers' living standards.
I mean, we've seen how the food prices doubled. I mean, bread, for instance, I mean, people can't even afford to buy the basic things. Transport, I mean, which is a very big part of workers' wages. Workers have to spend on transport to get to work without being subsidized by the employers and so on. People cannot afford electricity. Electricity has doubled with the latest increases. So that's had a huge negative impact on the working class and the poor, for instance.
In terms of the income that they've got, obviously it's a great impact, because obviously the things that they wanted to buy from the savings that they can make is now cut. Now they have to cost of living. Because the point is, the increases in the basic commodities, bread, food, transport, oil, heat, electricity, that's rising rapidly. So they are battling. They're battling, and that puts pressure on the income level. So they're pushing the unions to demand greater increases.
The South African Unemployed People's Movement in South Africa got a lot of media attention when they invaded supermarkets and took food. Here is Muzi Mkize.
No, to be honest with you, it wasn't a criminal offense. People were expressing their anger because they feel that they've been seldomly heard all along, because they've already served about 4 memorandums, but there was no correspondence from the government side. So they decided to draw the government attention in that way. As a result, the government is now paying attention. He wants to hear from us. What is it that you require? Because people went for the looting. It wasn't a criminal offense. It was a planned action.
The region of sub-Saharan Africa bears the greatest burden of HIV and AIDS, and has 68% of the world's HIV-positive people, but only 1% of the global expenditure on health. A danger noted by research is that public health spending on treatment is only a third of what it should be, and may be cut even more as the impact of the global crisis spreads. Professor Di McIntyre is from Equinet. They are a regional network looking at fair financing in public health in southern and eastern Africa.
Obviously, we need to try to increase funding for health services, and that the best way of doing that is through generating more public and more prepayment of healthcare. Essentially, what we see in many African countries at the moment is that a lot of people have to pay out of pocket for health services, and that's really problematic, particularly for vulnerable households. And we found that the fact that people have to pay for health services out of pocket often means that either people don't get access to care, or otherwise, if they do access care, sometimes those payments impact severely on the household and can actually impoverish households. If there's a serious illness, it can drag households into poverty.
For example, migrant workers in southern Africa go to South African mines to work and are exposed to occupational diseases like silicosis and tuberculosis. HIV infection rates are high among mine workers, and once their contract is over, they go back home where they deal with their disease. Boniswa Seti is from the AIDS Rights Alliance of Southern Africa, ARASA.
With the high rates of HIV, that has meant no one wants to claim responsibility for compensation, for compensating occupational TB. So if a person has TB and they also find out that person has HIV, so they would automatically say, this is not compensable TB, we cannot compensate you for this particular TB because it's related to HIV. While in fact, they haven't done anything to establish whether this person had TB before they actually had HIV or vice versa. But the thing is, or what we're trying to establish is that these three things, silicosis, which later forms TB, and HIV and TB can exist in one person. So then there is a need to constantly, you know, screen employees for any of these illnesses. All those that have been retrenched, all those that have been dismissed due to incapacity, no one is standing up for those groups of people.
Next up, let's hear how the labor movement is responding and explore dealing with the global crisis. Is another world possible? Tony Ehrenreich from the Congress of South African Trade Unions is clear on what must be done.
The unions have raised a number of areas, from reducing the interest rates in the South African economy, as well as making sure there is less space for speculative investment that led to the kind of crisis in the financial banking sectors. So we're hoping that different regulations will address the problem, as well as a stimulus package from government to ensure that the economy grows in a way that benefits working class communities. Well, the union believes that bailout packages are an important part of recovering the economy, but it has to have clear conditions linked to it. Amongst those conditions is workers and their role within the economy, and the kind of salaries and executive repayment packages that exist at the moment. There's got to be a complete restructuring of what happens in industry, and these bailout packages must be linked to compliance with those conditions.
In Uganda, the National Organization of Trade Unions has called on their government to assist, but the response has not been adequate. Here is James Batase.
Because so far what the trade union advocated to or wanted the government to do, the government has not done out. It has not bailed out any company. It has not come out with rescue package to either parastatals or cooperation with authorities. It has not increased wages for its civil servants. So actually, the response has not been good.
Professor McIntyre knows what can be done for public health for all, workers and the unemployed.
So Equinet is very much in favour of what we call prepayment funding. So that there's mechanisms through which you can contribute towards the costs of healthcare, but you don't have to pay at the time that you need health services. And the main ones are tax funding and also health insurance. What we've learned from international experience is that those resources are best used if they are combined and pooled for everyone's benefit. So we're not recommending setting up hundreds of little insurance schemes all over the place. We would like to see integrated funding for health services that can be used to benefit the entire population.
ARASA's Boniswa Seti says working regionally is constructive, looking after workers who are bearing the brunt of disease after working for big mining businesses.
And we've met with two ex-miners associations. One is in Lesotho and one is in Swaziland. So we're trying to establish relations or linkages with those organizations. We'll do capacity building for them, training and, you know, on these issues, on these different issues, as well as trainings on human rights and trainings on what their needs are in terms of compensation, what do they need to know, and how can we link them up with the relevant people when it comes to that.
There are various strategies for dealing with the global economic crisis. Joel Odija from the Nigerian Labour Congress reminds us not to forget the importance of solidarity.
More than anything before, this is the time to call for more global worker solidarity. On these issues, we can see government of these countries are coming together to solve solutions. We can see businesses are coming together at different forums. They were at Davos in January to provide thought about these solutions. Workers of the world should be seen to be more in terms of coming together to provide alternative. Workers of the world should be seen to come more together to provide resistance to some of these policies that have brought us to where we are. So when we do more of that in terms of our workers, international engagement and solidarity, I think we can always win. We win more.
Thank you for joining us on this African Labour Report, focusing on the impact of the global economic crisis. This report, bringing you the voices of African workers, was produced by Workers World Media Productions, South Africa, in solidarity with Building Bridges, WBAI, New York.
How exciting to be able to have this wonderful collaboration with Workers World Radio in Cape Town, South Africa. And I hope you enjoyed and learned from a painful but terribly informative report of the laboring classes of the continent of Africa. We're going to try to bring you that more often than we have been doing it.
Billionaires for Wealth Care presents Battle Hymn of the Insurance Company.
Let's save the status quo. Give a healthcare corporation. Never faces regulation. We'll be brimming with elation. Let's save the status quo. Bought a bunch of senators and congresspeople too. They serve our corporate interests and we tell them what to do. This gravy train will stop the day a healthcare bill gets through. Let's save the status quo.
Homeschool, I'm a billionaire.
Get out of here, you want Americans!
Team Ads Man! Boys, come in!
In every other wealthy nation, healthcare is a right. But not here in America. No, not without a fight. We're fighting for the right to monstrous profits day and night. Let's save the status quo!
If a healthcare corporation never faces regulation.
Let's save the status quo.
Our next segment, Senator Bernie Sanders Unfiltered on Healthcare Reform, produced by Robert Greenwald and Brave New Films.
No matter what we end up with here in the Congress, I can assure you it will be complicated, and I think that that is unfortunate.
Hi, Bernie. My name is Steve, and I'm self-employed. I work at home, and I had a question about some of the health care reform packages. I spend a fortune on health insurance. I pay about $1,000 a month, and I have a $3,000 deductible, so as a self-employed person, it's killing me. I'd like to know what the health care reform would do to help the self-employed. Thanks a lot.
Steve, thanks very much for that excellent question. And I think you and millions of other people are asking the same question. What is in this legislation for me? And let me begin by saying that no matter what we end up with here in the Congress, I can assure you it will be complicated. And I think that that is unfortunate. My own strong preference has been from the very beginning that what would serve the American people best, what would be most cost-effective as we move toward a universal comprehensive health care system is a single-payer Medicare for all. And I like that idea not just because it's not complicated in an abstract sense, but because its simplicity ends up saving us hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars a year in administrative costs, in profiteering, and in waste of time and effort on the part of physicians and patients alike. But that is not what we're going to end up with. Although I should say, we are going to fight for at least an option for states to go forward with a single-payer system. But where we are right now is that in the health education bill that I was involved in, you would probably benefit significantly depending on your income. As a small, independent business person, you would be put into an exchange where you have a choice of different providers, different companies, including a public option, which likely would be a lot less expensive than what you're looking at right now. In addition, depending upon your income, you would receive a federal subsidy. So that would depend upon how much money you or your family make a year. But the likelihood is, if you didn't make a whole lot of money, you would be in pretty good shape in terms of the legislation that at least came out of the Health Education Committee. Now, as we proceed with bills coming to the floor of the House and the Senate, let me just briefly mention some of the areas that we're concerned about. Number one, of course, is the issue of affordability. How much will the average American have to pay for health insurance after this bill is passed? The bill that came out of the Finance Committee chaired by Senator Baucus was not good in that respect. It was too expensive, and we're going to work as hard as we can to lower that amount of money. Number two, the issue of public option. What is it? How many people will be eligible for it? I mentioned that Steve would be eligible for it, but there are many people who would not. So what we want to do is, A, have a strong national public option available in 50 states and seeing as many people as possible having that choice, which I think also will put pressure on the insurance companies to keep their rates lower than they otherwise would be. Third issue that we're beginning to tackle right now is, how do you pay for the $800 billion to $1 trillion that are going to need it to provide the subsidies and other types of benefits in terms of increasing primary health care, in terms of disease prevention that we want to see in any final product? And that debate is going to be hot and heavy. What came out of the Finance Committee bill, for example, would essentially put a tax on good health insurance programs that workers in many cases have fought very hard to obtain. That is not acceptable to me. In the House, they're looking about raising money outside of healthcare, asking the wealthy to pay their fair share into the system. Makes more sense to me. But that issue has got to be dealt with as well. So we are going to see legislation come to the floor shortly. There's going to be a whole lot of debate about the nature of coverage and about how we pay for it. So Steve, thank you very much for asking a question I think is on the minds of millions of Americans.
In every other wealthy nation, healthcare is a right. But not here in America. No, not without a fight. We're fighting for the right to monstrous profits day and night. Let's save the status quo!
If a healthcare corporation never faces regulation, we'll be brimming with elation.
Let's save the status quo.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.